I'm Mark Purcell, and this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 and 88.5. John Bowling, retired founder of Bowling Portfolio Management, is on the money with Chris DeSimio this morning.
Well, volatility returned to the markets last week, and much of it was intraday. They got off to a pretty reasonable start on Wednesday, shrugging off more sluggish economic news. The Dow Jones Industrial is up a nearly triple-digit gain. And then Chairman of the Federal Reserve, Ben Bernanke, began to testify before Congress, the semiannual testimony. And that seemed to put the brakes on the rally. But the big about-face came later in the afternoon when the minutes of the Fed's Open Market Committee were released, and it showed that the Federal Reserve was actually beginning to lean towards taking the punch bowl away. And that turned what was nearly a 100-point gain into a decline of over 100 points by the closing bell. And it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show our friend, Mr. John Bowling. John, the founder and retired chairman of Bowling Portfolio Management in Cincinnati, Ohio, a 1958 graduate from the University of Cincinnati, a degree in law, and a legend in the world of money managers here in Cincinnati. John joins us from high atop his perch in sunny Naples, Florida, where we hope it is warmer. A little cool front coming here into Cincinnati. John, thanks so much for being with us this Saturday morning.
It's great to be here.
John, those words, sufficiently strong and sustained growth, that seemed to kind of rattle the markets a little bit. Now, why should we be afraid of sufficiently strong and sustained growth? Why would that unnerve people so much?
Well, anything lasting too long makes people think it's going to reverse, and it's next to impossible, really, to know much about the future. We can calculate and plan, and people almost have to do that in some way, but the truth is the knowledge of the future is extremely limited, and it's very difficult to know. When you come, say, to pricing securities, it's very difficult to know better than the market what's going to happen in the future. The market pretty much reflects already what people know about the future, but we all have personal opinions, and to some large degree, I suggest that our personal opinions aren't worth a heck of a lot. They're not worth more than other people's personal opinions. And in general, you've got to play things cautiously and safe.
Yeah. If the concern then about the Fed's stimulus, in other words, people worrying that all this money that had been printed might somehow find its way into the economy and wreak its inflationary havoc, if concern about that had kept people out of stocks, why would the Fed signaling that it might be ending, why would that be considered as a negative?
Well, it's a negative because if they stop the stimulus, why, interest rates would logically rise, and rising interest rates would surely depress bond prices, and they might well tend to depress, they would tend to depress stock prices. So people are frightened of anything that tends to raise interest rates. Sooner or later, we all know that's going to happen, of course.
Mm-hmm.
The Fed is not likely to perpetually engage in stimulative activities because that leads to a runaway inflation, which, frankly, is, in my opinion, always the biggest threat to investors. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the time, because as you look around the world, currencies have been destroyed over and over and over again. South America, Asia, Europe, no matter where you look, it's inflation destroying the value of money. So to avoid that, you're more or less are forced into owning a lot of stocks or a lot of real estate, something that can be protected from inflation.
Yeah, so if we are then entering an era where stagnation gives way to some kind of growth, which or something that triggers inflation, which you would assume then would imply that there's some heightened level of economic activity going on, which sectors then of the market would likely do better than others? In other words, are we moving away from an environment where the whole market kind of moves in lockstep, all the different sectors, and one that you have a split going on between sectors that are likely to do well and some that are likely to lag behind? Is that what's shaping up in your estimation?
There's always sectors that are going to do better and always those that are going to do worse. And if we can find the sectors that are going to perform, we really will beat the market and be in great shape. The problem is it's very difficult to know in advance. Logically, you would think real estate would respond well to inflationary pressures, but not so well, for example, to higher interest rates. But in general, the whole economy doesn't respond well to higher interest rates. If we get those, it's probably a sign that the economy has recovered somewhat and is getting stronger. So as always, you have mixed signals. You have higher interest rates, but you have a stronger economy, which would tend to increase earnings of corporations. So it's a nice balance, and like all nice balances, it's very hard to maintain. Usually you maintain stimulus for too long, and you start trying to put on the brakes, and that doesn't work because everything's looking good, the economy's recovering, and you put on the brakes further. This is the Federal Reserve doing this. And finally, you kind of overshoot, and you have a reaction to excessively high interest rates. This balance never stops. It's like being on a teeter-totter, you know. Sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. And usually if you're up too high, you're going to come down. But the difference between a teeter-totter and a real marketplace is in a teeter-totter, you know whether you're up or down. In the market, it's not at all clear.
Yeah, yeah. You know, thinking about this, if you adjust for inflation, the major market indices, the Dow and the Standard & Poor's 500, are kind of about where they were 13 years ago, if not a little lower, actually, if you adjust for inflation. To what extent does this current environment remind you and all your years in the money management of the beginning of the 1982 through 2000 bull market? That had followed, of course, a choppy sideways 16-year stretch from 66 through 82. Does this kind of look and feel like that to you?
Well, I think, Chris, there's a real danger in trying to look at past patterns and then say, hey, this is very similar to 1929 or 1982 or some period. You just never know. There's all kinds of techniques for determining whether the market is high or low. The problem is, in looking back at them as applying them to the past, it never seems to work out too well.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, my personal opinion is this market has quite a distance to go yet. But that depends on, to a large extent, on future events, which I have no way of knowing what they'll be. For example, we could have a humdinger of a war in Syria. Well, I guess we have one right now. That could expand to draw in a lot of other countries and might draw us in too. But whether it will or won't, I have no way of knowing. And I don't think anybody else has.
Yeah, it's out of your control.
The world's always a mess. That's one thing you can depend upon.
There's always something going on. You know, you have
always.
You have long, John Bowling, been a proponent of these oil pipeline companies and that particular sector of the
yes.
market as a way for kind of a bond proxy, as a way to derive income that might have a little better upside versus inflation than traditional bonds. Are you still as optimistic about these pipeline companies, without naming names, of course, but the whole pipeline sector in general, does that still look like something that income-starved investors might want to take a peek at?
Yes, income-starved investors are taking a look at it, and it's up in price from where it was. Not last year. Last year they didn't do that well, but this year they've been doing pretty well. And the outlook is quite favorable because of the discoveries of, what everybody refers to as hydraulic fracturing and directional drilling. That is the ability to send a drill down and turn it so it can go to any direction you want. And the whole process has resulted in discoveries of oil and gas all over the United States. And this stuff is generally most effectively carried by pipelines. So the outlook for pipeline companies is extraordinarily good.
Okay,
now, the one thing that could happen, they have some very favorable tax treatment for master limited partnerships. That always could be changed, which could mess things up a bit. But as far as business goes, these pipeline companies are expanding in a very profitable way and will continue to do so for some years. To get into some more detail on that, the low price of natural gas means to chemical companies that they can build facilities to make ethylene and other building blocks that produce plastics more economically than in the United States and anywhere else in the world. So these large multi-billion-dollar, what they call crackers, are being built and coming online in 2015, 2016, 2017. I mean, many years from now, so it's a long-run deal. But the pipelines that are carrying the natural gas, which is going to be used by the chemical crackers, that provides, let's say, an underpinning for the whole sector of the market.
Yeah. Well, there is a lot coming down the pipeline, so to speak. And John Bolling, I want to thank you so much for taking time away from your weekend to be with us here.
Thank you very much, Chris.
And for Cincinnati Edition, I'm Chris DeSimeo on The Money.